the opportunity, Chairperson, to presentation on quarter two performance by the department on the annual performance plan. I must say I feel a bit like a historian. It feels such a long time ago to talk about the period July to September last year in an economy that has gone through so many other changes in that time. From a compliance point, of course, we need to report to the committee on a quarterly basis, and we now do so. So, Chairperson, we've prepared a presentation, and I'm going to use the screen just to highlight key issues, but it is the same as the printed copy that has been circulated. The report covers the period July to September, and that's what we mean by quarter two in this report. The word quarter is used differently in different public documents. When it refers to the financial quarter, it's this period. When it refers to the calendar quarter, it's an earlier period. So we try to just use a common expression in the report. So the context of our work are the six key strategic objectives that the committee will be very familiar with and that has been previously tabled at the committee. The programs, the strategic objectives and products are all known. And so I go straight to program one, which deals with the performance indicator on an unqualified audit. This covers the audit, the previous audit, not the audit that we are allowed to do. It was unqualified. There was improved management report, no material misstatements, and a positive conclusion on performance information. Slide 6 sets out the key summary of findings. But there were some challenges, and those challenges have been the ones that informed what the department calls a heat map, in which it identifies particularly repeat audit findings and the priority findings. And the ones that I think the department has not done well on is the human resource management matters, including one non-compliance matter regarding verification of employees' qualifications prior to taking office. And the heat map mitigation plans are, assured now monitored very actively every second Friday. And progress reports are presented to the audit committee, to the director general, and to the management committee. The second program of the department is on the growth path and social dialogue. And slide 8 sets out what are the key performance indicators in the document. Slide 9, excuse me, begin to report against that. And so economic context, the GDP in quarter two was just over a trillion rand, a nominal increase of 14 billion from the previous quarter. Manufacturing expanded by 8 billion. General government expanded by 6 billion. Mining and quarrying expanded by 5 billion. But quite significantly, agriculture decreased by 16 billion rand. So, honorable members can see modest gains that we made in manufacturing and mining are offset against what we lost in agriculture. The annualized real change in GDP for the quarter was 0.7%, which was an improvement on the previous quarter's contraction. And quite significantly, the biggest contributor to growth in the quarter was fairly robust growth in manufacturing. In fact, manufacturing kept us out of recession last year. But real manufacturing value add in this quarter was still less than that of quarter four of 2014. So if you just look at this, we see the drought hitting the economy very hard, manufacturing helping to mitigate the effects of drought, and even though manufacturing grew quite strongly, we still have not got back to the high point of manufacturing in quarter 4, 2014. We avoided recession, but we can't celebrate our growth rates. They are significantly below the levels that we need for our national goals. Real GDP for the first 9 calendar months was 1.5% higher than the first 9 months of 2014. And then it provides some information on global growth. The IMF forecast in that period is still reasonably robust, but already you can see there a restatement of global forecast to 3.3% down from 3.5%, and developing country economy growth prospects were cut by a further 0.1 percentage point. And importantly, at the time the IMF indicated the reasons for it set out there, it's one that I think members of the committee would be very familiar with. There were commodity prices, tight external financial conditions, structural bottlenecks, rebalancing in China, and economic distress related to geopolitical factors. Now, I draw attention to that because the impact of those factors began to be felt even more strongly after this quarter. The employment story was actually quite positive in terms of growth, but of course on the backdrop of very, very significant unemployment levels. So one has got to always balance looking where you're making progress with the number of unemployed that need to find jobs. So 15.8 million people were employed by September 2015, which is the highest number since the inception of the Quarterly Labour Force Survey. Employment increased by 171,000 from quarter one to quarter two, and year-on-year employment increased by 700,000, roughly 712,000 to be precise. Where were these new jobs? Now, quite interestingly, even though agriculture was declining in GDP, so it was contracting because of the drought, agriculture employment was still expanding. So you've got to watch that number because eventually these two catch up with each other. You're not going to be able to maintain agricultural jobs growth when a drought hits your core. So it means that some of the jobs growth we've seen is vulnerable to further downturns in agriculture in subsequent quarters. Construction is still very robust, that's the infrastructure program. Finance and other business services, that's really all your services sector, excluding trade, grow also quite strongly. And private households, that would be domestic workers, gardeners, activities where individuals employ other individuals in their private homes, also grow strongly. Transport registered a fairly significant decline, 34,000 jobs. If we look at the storyline disaggregated a little bit, at provincial level, in absolute numbers, Gauteng created the most jobs in that quarter, followed by KZN and then Limpopo. In percentage terms, jobs increased in Limpopo by 12%, that's the highest, followed by KZN and then the Western Cape. But we had job losses in the Eastern Cape and virtually flipped jobs performance in Northern Cape and Northwest. On the gender side of the jobs created in the quarter, a third were for women and two-thirds for men. But if we take the annual growth, there's a happier story on a gender basis, where almost half of the jobs were created for women and just over half for men. In quarter two, the unemployment rate for women was 27.9%, and for men, 23.5%. The youth labor force increased by 437,000 year-on-year, so that the annual growth in the number of young people who enter the labor market ready and available to work. The economy created 374,000 jobs for young people, and the youth unemployment rate decreased from 56.8% to 35.8%. It's still extraordinarily high. When one think about it, one in three young people ready and available to find a job and unable to find a job. So good news about the decline, but I think that's the point I made about overall unemployment. We've got to keep our eye on the jobless challenge as our most significant one. The PSCC tracked youth employment infrastructure and all 30 major projects that it's tracking on youth employment, we saw roughly half of the people on those projects were young people. 42,000 out of 85,500 or 85,900. So what it shows is we're beginning to get the infrastructure youth angle right, that if we can get to the point over time where 60% of employment on infrastructure is by young people, we would have achieved the goal that we set ourselves. For the period ahead, the idea would be step by step to increase this 49% and increase the number of young people who get opportunities. Moving on to KPI 4 on support of the job drivers, we provide information to the PICC on the economic context, did work on investment, chicken farming, social economy, social entrepreneurship, steel and mining. And the next few slides just spell out what those are. On jobs and infrastructure, we saw that employment growth has been faster than GDP growth in the past 2 years. Now, that's a good thing, because we're trying to make the economy more labor-intensive. In other words, for every billion rand of GDP, we want more jobs created by that. And certainly the last 2 years have seen a growing labor intensity in the economy. All sectors gain jobs except manufacturing, and as we know, construction in the public services grew particularly fast. Our job now is to get some of that growth energy into the private sector. As Minister Gordon said in the budget speech, how do we ignite growth in the private sector part of our economy? The impact of the BOLD program emerges from rapid growth in Limpopo and Mpumalanga. If we look at it, you'll see from October 2010 to June 2015, total employment in Limpopo grew by 350,000 people, and in Mpumalanga by just over 200,000 people. Now, this is significantly faster than growth in other provinces, and it shows when you invest in infrastructure, you can lift your growth rate. Of course, the challenge would be now to ensure that what you gain from that jobs growth and from the lift of infrastructure is long-term and permanent. And that means where you invest. So if you invest in energy, really laying the basis for long-term growth. The share of adults with employment rose from 29% to 36% in Limpopo and from 39% to 46% in Mpumalanga. Those are quite significant shifts in a relatively short period. It shows another quality of infrastructure. It's a fairly sharp instrument, can move numbers up quite quickly. But, of course, as I say, it's the offtake from your infrastructure that's the critical long-term driver of jobs. Promoting investment at the IDC pipeline, I undertook 4 major roadshows with the IDC leadership to improve the IDC pipeline. We got the money that was set aside in that period, but the difficulty was finding viable projects that met the legal criteria that the IDC needs to meet. We had 2 engagements hosted by a global investment bank with domestic investors. We had an engagement with black industrialists hosted by Gauteng Premier, and we engaged with medium-sized black industrialists. It's trying to get the IDC resource base known by everybody, what the criteria is, what they need to do to be able to access IDC support. We also provided support during the quarter on a number of other investment-linked initiatives. The Presidential Mining Sector consulted the forum with the mining captains of industry there. The Presidential Working Group meeting, that was the general captains of industry. I addressed a Standard Bank China investors delegation meeting, and we had one of the meetings with individual investors in sectors such as retail and finance. On the chicken side, the department translated the booklet on indigenous chicken to an additional indigenous language, Shuenda, and 3,000 copies were produced. We also facilitated training for 2 young women in broiler breeder management. On the social economy, we held a high-level meeting with the world's biggest industrial cooperative. It's called the Mondragon Cooperative, it's Spanish, and there's about 74,000 workers that are in many different sectors of the economy. It's quite an extraordinary job creation effort in Spain, and we tried to see what the lessons were from the experience. We co-hosted the Global Academy on Solidarity and Social Economy and presented the paper Social Entrepreneurs in Dava. The next few slides unpack that a little bit more. So, for example, the Global Academy on Solidarity and Social Economy had 120 participants, 4 continents, 42 countries, and slide 20 shows what the discussions focused on: green economy, role of government, public and private procurement to support social entrepreneurship, township enterprises, and so on. The department participated in the Free State Social Entrepreneurship in Dava, 300 participants, and the work of the department focused on getting the National Development Plan and the HP locked into the thinking at provincial level to highlight the instruments to support small businesses and cooperatives. So we took the social enterprise fund administered by the IDC and provided information on that to the Free State Social Entrepreneurs and look at social accords at local level. On steel industry, this is an ongoing story. We will be reporting further on this in subsequent quarters, but it's a complex one. Every country is trying to protect the steel industry, some more successful than others. There's a task team on steel that has been meeting very regularly in that quarter to try to develop a government response to pricing pressures in global markets. We completed a competition probe into pricing. We built additional capacity for ITAC to implement scrap metal policy, and we worked with a number of public agencies on a training layoff scheme for a company in the steel sector. It's been quite a complex one, and some of that developments is impacting in the current quarter. We also engaged with the IDC. The IDC made funding available for that company, Hafele Steel. There were meetings with stakeholders, creditors, to try to keep the steel company in business so that potential investors can make a bid for the company. Essentially, that company's big problem is in Mpumalanga. It's called Evra Steel or Highveld Steel. And it makes these steel beams and these tracks, rail tracks. And the difficulty the company faced is, in our view, significant underinvestment over many years by the foreign investor led to a company that was quite uncompetitive. And in a very competitive steel market, where China and other countries were investing in new technology, new management approaches and so on, the company was really just extracting value from its vanadium mine. And when we do quarter four's report, we will be able to give more details on where we've come subsequently. But in this quarter, it was pretty much a holding operation, avoiding the company closing its doors immediately and trying to activate support from other government entities. On the mining industry, PDD was one of 4 core departments that worked to coordinate a mining industry intervention, and honorable members will see there what the activities were. The key areas that we're looking at: local procurement, beneficiation, competition, and so on. On African integration, I looked at an acquisition of equity proposal in a company based in Mali where the IDC wanted to invest, and it fitted in with our criteria of promoting African industrialization, supporting growth elsewhere on the continent, so that we create a market for South African goods, but we also create a continent that becomes a more significant economic player. There's some details then, and I hope by the time of the budget vote that I can make a more detailed report on this particular investment. On the green economy, KPI 5, we approved an IDC investment that had a cross-border element. So all the cross-border investments by the IDC require our consideration and approval. This one was an investment in a Polish company. that in turn established a factory in East London to recycle waste plastics into valuable downstream products. The project proposal indicates that up to 3,000 informal job opportunities for waste collectors can be created, with 50 permanent jobs. So, it's one of a number of recycling initiatives by the IDC as part of its contribution to the Green Economy Accord. We invested, the IDC invested, in a platinum fuel cell project. Essentially, platinum fuel cells is a process by which we generate electricity, energy, using platinum as an input. And it's quite interesting. It's quite expensive to pilot it, so the private sector would ordinarily not come in here. But if we can create a cost-effective generation of energy, we create a whole new market for South African platinum. So that represents the interest of the IEC. It's put a significant sum of money in, and it's backed Black Industrious in a project that specializes in the distribution in distributed energy development. KPI 6 on entrepreneurship and employment for women and youth. Engage the Competition Commission seminar on local procurement in July last year. We discussed effective how to ensure that we can achieve both competition aims and development aims on jobs, and that has been one of the key new areas that has developed in our approach to competition, trying to combine both more efficient companies, but also companies that employ people, companies that localize their supply chains. On NARISEC, ED and Rural Development was four cooperatives, and honorable members will see the details of the cooperatives on slide 29, and this is to monitor progress since these cooperatives exited from a program called NARISEC. NARISEC is a youth development program run by rural development, where they take young people from rural areas and they put them through intensive training with the idea to make them capable of self-employment, local entrepreneurship, or employment in other entities. Out of this, we identified some challenges and solutions. So training, a private college, Isatsi Solutions, have agreed they'll train four co-ops. Karen Beef, a big South African company, agreed to provide a vet to visit one of these sites and vaccinate the cattle, do mentorship and improve infrastructure for cattle by installing pipes for drinking water, and a small dip for vaccinating the cattle. Now, they're quite micro interventions, but very often cooperatives need exactly these things. There's also more details of a proposal on slide 31 of what DRD will be doing based on the discussions that we've had with them. Vegetable shelter tunnels, retaining boreholes, and so on. Moving on to KPI 17, EDD convened technical MINEC. All the provinces attended. We looked at SEZs, Black industrialists, small business and township enterprises, revitalizing industrial parks, and implementing social accords. The department also, with the Deputy Minister's leadership, facilitated and hosted a workshop in July last year with Free State Province, and this resulted in the province repackaging the manufacturing projects to be submitted under the Black Industrialist Program. We provided technical support to Mpumalanga at the Economic Cluster Planning Workshop to look at the AFP targets. And we drafted an assessment report of the Northern Cape Provincial Growth and Development Strategy and took part in some of their meetings. There was also a special presidential package for distressed mining towns, and slide 34 sets out work of the department a meeting with the Western District Municipality, the Gentle Integrated Master Plan, a meeting with the Sekhukhune District Municipality that discussed the Water and Sanitation Master Plan. I'm moving on to Program 2, which deals, let me go to KPI 8, which deals with the support programs for more effective industrial relations. Here, the social dialogue engagements took the form of quite a number of discussions with organized labor on economic development and building more effective industrial relations. How do we move away from a conflictual industrial relations environment in which everybody seeks simply to maximize their own gains into one where workers see opportunity by cooperating with their own employer for long-term wage growth and employment growth? So a lot of our discussion here is to try to deal with a more and more polarized labor market. This also included work on stabilizing industrial relations through meetings in EDLAC and working on the national minimum wage. I also addressed local and global stakeholders at two international industrial relations conferences hosted here in South Africa. On KPI 8, keynote addresses were also done that looked at labor rights, economic growth and job creation, partnership, a package for jobs and development, industrialization and infrastructure. Staying with KPI 8, slide 38 looks at the compliance monitoring system for state procurement, and there's details here to, that sets out how we can implement the local procurement accord, which is one of the social accords that we concluded previously, and where there's been policy initiatives around designating products that must be bought locally. We're trying to get a slightly more systematic way of monitoring adherence to this, so we don't wait for an AG after the event 2 years later. Part of this has been sourceless of top suppliers and products to establish local content levels for things that are governed by. So we can see where's the opportunity. There's a case study under KPI 8 looking at local procurement where we facilitated an investment in a tin mining company in the DRC. I may ask, what does that have to do with local procurement? But it's the specifications we've put in that product, in that project, that will support the South African economy, and I hope to be able to announce more details in the budget speech on that. That takes us into Program 3 on Investment, Competition and Trade. Slide 40 sets out the KPIs, 41 sets out KPI 9, and KPI 9 is on Cabinet reports on the strategic integrated projects of the infrastructure program. 18 reports were developed for Cabinet. Reports noted that 52 billion rand was spent on infrastructure in the quarter. Then we tracked actively 59 billion rands worth of projects in that period, and that implementation of the projects and operational responsibility remains, of course, with the relevant line departments. Some of the things we unblocked are set out on slide 42, for example, a water use license for Kusile, one for the Diza transmission power line, one for the Duva transmission line, and so on. So five water use licenses where the normal processes have resulted in them being stuck, either information expected from the applicants, which applicants don't provide, or challenges in the bureaucracy to deal with. So then our team would go in, find out what the problem is, liaise between them, collect the information if necessary, provide it to the regulator who has to issue the water use license. So it's very kind of hands-on practical work. Similarly, on environmental impact assessments, you'll see there the work at Kendall, Camden, and Majuba. We also worked with Western Cape on a transaction of land in the Saldanha IDZ. KPI 11 is on decisions implemented. So the PICC tabled a number of actions at the Cabinet report in July last year. We also noted at the meeting in September the launch of Unit 6 of Medupi, the completion of the 2 billion rand Puga wind farm in the Eastern Cape, and the launch of the Water Leak Maintenance Program. KPI 12 are the meetings, the sequential significant number of meetings of the PICC structures. KPI 13 is our work on KPI 5, on Strategic Integrated Project 5, and I undertook a site visit to Saldanha to receive a report on progress with the IDC, and to look at the IDC-funded gas operation in the area. This picture here is, this year is what you call a gas split. It still needs to be completed, but it basically is like a massive industrial version of the little K-back gas cylinders that you have, and that's used for gas storage in Saldanha. Looking at Program 3, Strategic Objective 5, there's four KPIs, and KPI 15 is set out to page 47. We worked on investment unblocking. One initiative in food processing, two in the steel sectors, one in clothing, and one involving the township economy. In the food processing sector, we worked with a company that had difficulties in accessing funding to enhance their competitiveness. And as a result of our intervention, we unblocked that. The company has two factories working 3 shifts, 5 days a week, and they employ 480 people in their factories. And they say they have a network of 18,000 workers who resell their products on street corners, spaza shops, and stations. We also worked on a company that got into business rescue in the steel industry, and details are set out on slide 49. The attempt to keep the company open, and the discussions in the quarter with a potential international investor to buy the company. We worked with a different steel company in primary steel making, and their challenge was they were short of rail capacity to move their products, and particularly to move the iron ore that they needed in the steel mill. And following discussions with Transnet, Transit agreed to increase the locomotives from 14 to 19 because it helps also to keep the road quality good by shifting from road to rail. There's a nice case study of a black industrialist who is in component manufacturing, and he supported the evaluation of the loan application, helped him to make sure that he's got all the necessary documentation, he knows what the information is that the financiers required, and in this case he put a loan request into the IDC, and his business employs 280 people. They produce auto components such as hubs and calipers, and they do support for a range of other work outside the auto sector, like components for rail and locomotives, pulleys, brackets, mine support products, and so on. Now, our challenge is to get more black South Africans into real industry, to move away from the BEE model where someone tries to get 5% or 15% shareholding in someone else's company, and they hold themselves open to be the lobbyist. To move from that passive and not very productive model into a much more productive model of empowerment where South Africans, black South Africans, but also white South Africans, make things, grow things, dig things, and you create value in that way. There's a case study of a clothing company that needed to access public support to improve equipment and machinery, and there was a delay from one of the sister departments in processing the application, and this company saved 2,300 jobs when the previous investor pulled out, and it's employed a further 600 people. There's a final case that's quite a nice, quite small but quite nice one, of a township enterprise. It's a manufacturer of picture frames, and this young person basically worked from a shack, and we facilitated his relocating to the River Sands small business hub, which honourable members may recall a number of months ago, in fact, about 11 months ago, before this period covered in quarter two, I, together with Mr. Zulu and the Prince of Gauteng, had officially opened. The Liberal Enterprise also received a order from a major hotel chain, 275,000 picture frames. Now, that looks like a small sum, but for a small business, that's a real growth spurt. KPI 16 is monitoring industrial funding targets. We did a business training workshop focused on township development with a NPO called Hand in Hand Southern Africa. We did site visits. There's Raisa Bakeries in Mamasbury, West in Darling, and it's a new bakery business in townships where they do this bakery work in a container. So quite a bit of news stories about it. It's been regarded as a very positive development. I remain concerned at the relatively modest returns that the women social entrepreneurs are making, because we're going to try to find models that are sustainable beyond the period of state support. In this case, we got the state support from the EU. There was an EU fund, we tapped it, we made it available, we got them to comply with the 1,000,001 technical requirements, but increasingly for us, these must serve as pilots to see how can we get young people, women entrepreneurs, black Africans into productive activity in which the state's hand is light rather than heavy, where the state doesn't have to be the principal supporter because resources are limited. And the less we need to do, the more we can spread the limited resources we have. So I'm just pulling out a little bit there the dual component to that. We also facilitated a consideration of a dispute between airport company and a black entrepreneur, and we hope we can get this matter settled. Here's some macro data on the IDC funding over this period: 6.5 billion rand approved, 3 billion rand disbursed, and 3,691 jobs that will either be created or saved as a result of the investment that has been made. And honourable members will see the provincial distribution of those jobs and the industrial distribution, the sectors. KPI 18 is working with the DFIs to improve their capacity. We have quarterly management meetings. I engage strategically with the IDC on 7 occasions in the quarter, looking at providing guidance to them on the policy environment, global challenges, domestic investment requirement, the development of a project pipeline, corporate governance, improved institutional efficiencies, and human resource policies. So really what this practically works or means is trying to get the IDC to see how it acts as a counter-cyclical force. As the economy slows down, ordinarily the IDC pipeline slows down. So IDC is typically what you call a post-cyclical institution. If the economy does well, the IDC increases investment. If the economy does poorly, the IDC decreases. And the reason for that is the IDC don't open its own businesses. It supports the private sector. So it's an industrial funder for the private sector. So, of course, when the economy is going down, private sector players are more bearish, more reluctant to invest, to put their money at risk. The markets are drying up, demand is drying up, so the IDC has got a smaller pipeline. So how do you then work in those conditions to reverse that logic? To say precisely when the economy slows down, that the IDC has to do even more to be able to help to kickstart the economy. I think that's essentially what a lot of that engagement is about, how to do that effectively and within the IDC mandate. And I also engaged with the IDC on the annual report and communicated the key outcomes in the public announcement of the IDC results. On competition and trade, there was KPI 19 dealing with investment growth and off-take agreements, so this deals with the infrastructure part. One of the more significant meetings that quarter was with the chairperson of the China Construction Bank, which laid the basis for an agreement that was then signed in the following quarter. So we'll give more details in the next quarter of what we achieved here. We also worked on strengths in the economic regulators, did a questionnaire, reviewed the capacity, did a small database, did a desktop study looking at role and mandate, aiming legislation and departing for oversight. One of the KPIs is to ensure that the competition policies authorities support the employment, industrialization and development objectives. And one thing that we did previously was to help set up a 240 million rand local supplier fund with Massmart Walmart. And honorable members will recall it was a big court case. EDD took on the issue and the Competition Appeal Court eventually resolved that the company needed to set up a localization fund. We serve on the board of the fund, in fact our representative is sitting here, and there are three projects that are interesting that the fund supported. The one was a grant to a company making plastic pots for plant growers, and this will result actually in a reduction in the cost of the trays that are currently imported from Germany. So Walmart would also benefit, local people would benefit, and this will result in an offtake of 2.8 million rand per annum for the company. So quite a nice little practical example of moving things along. There's a charcoal project where grant funding of just short of 900,000 was made to a company producing charcoal for equipment infrastructure. The funding will enable the company to create a Massmart home brand and an offtake of 3.4 million. There's a cooking gel project, 1.9 million, and it assists this company to provide two private labels, and it resulted in import replacement. What we used to import, we're now making locally. And as I noted earlier, 20% reduction in cost. So here we have two examples where we're actually not only getting an import replacement, but retailers actually benefiting. So the more those examples, the more you get projects that have legs. In other words, you don't need to urge the retailer to do it. There's a commercial logic over time with these projects. KPI 22, this was quite a significant thing, and I want to draw the committee's attention to the fact that we gazetted an amended tariff investigation set of regulations. This follows a fair bit of work that the department and IDAC had done and quite a bit of discussions with me. And we made changes to what IDAC needs to do when a company applies for tariff increases or decreases, and also what the companies are required to do. And one of the most significant things is we put jobs for the first time as an explicit consideration by IDAC. So we put in the gazette or in the regulation a number of factors that IDAC must look at. You see them on slide 64. The local industry's capacity and potential, employment, including labor intensity, in other words, is it a sector with a large number of people per unit of investment, and labor demographics, they have a lot of jobs in a poor area in the country. They've got to look at investment, price differentials, market shares, import and export data, demand and supply conditions, the financial state of the industry, price and cost structures, what is the current rate of effective protection, and is there a domestic product or substitute product available. So this is an attempt now to get more and more of our laws to explicitly incorporate the jobs consideration. API 23, our engagements with trade and competition authorities, the acting DG met with IPAC to discuss administrative efficiencies, held a meeting with the economic and regulatory bodies in September to discuss financial matters, looked at the quarterly reports of the Commission, the Tribunal, and IPAC. And on slide 66, we look at the work of IPAC over the period. Tariffs were raised on wheat and wheat flour, sugar, and on lead acid batteries, and we reduced tariffs, we reduced duties on batteries, and IPAC imposed a trade remedy on cement. So that, in brief, acting chairperson, is the quarter two report of last year. There is also a financial section that the DG is available to take the committee through, and I look to you if you'd like him to just quickly deal with two or three slides, after which we would have completed the report.
Good morning, Chairperson, honourable members, Minister. These financials cover the period 1st April to 30th September 2015. That's the first 6 months of the financial year. As of 30th September 2015, the department has spent $424 million, out of an allocation of 886 million rand. This translates into 48% of the total allocated budget, which is approximately 50% for half the year. So effectively, we're on track with our spending. With respect to your goods and services and compensation, we have spent 54 million out of an allocated budget of 152 million rand. And I'll come to reasons for that later on. The tables below reflect the expenditure in detail. So I wouldn't go through those tables effectively given the high level summary offered, except to say that if you see your investment competition case, including transfer expenses, we have spent 21%. And the reason for that is that not all projects were in the third and fourth quarter of the financial year. So you'll see that coming from subsequent quarters. The next slide shows you the expenditure per economic classification. The next slide will give you the explanation for the variances. The composition of employees, the variance is due to vacancies in the department. A process is in place for filling the vacant position, and we made substantial progress up to the fourth quarter, to this quarter, and that will show toward the end of the financial year. We've also engaged with tertiary institutions to second experts and case skills for short-term assignments, and these secondaries will be held against vacant posts of the department. And the goods and services, the invoices for office accommodation and legal costs have not come through during that period, although it's already incurred. So that will come through in subsequent period. And we obviously also had less funds spent on traveling venues and facilities, which is part of the cost-cutting measures within government. The transfers and subsidies, we're on track with the spending of transfers and subsidies. With capital assets, we had an increase in expenditure due to the reclassification of finance leases. This is a technical issue. The National Treasury wanted us to reclassify our finance leases to assets, and therefore we had to do an adjustment during the, or we did an adjustment during the adjustment issue to compensate for capital assets. That is the final solution. Thank you.
Thanks very much, Minister. Thanks very much. Let me welcome Honourable Rand and Honourable Atkins. We'll deliberate with the presentation and ask questions. Then after the questions, we'll then be for 10 minutes, and then the Minister of the Department will come and answer. Can we start deliberations? Thanks. Honourable Atkins.
Minister, sorry, I know this is not directly relevant to this this quarter, but certainly in the latest budget, there does appear to be a very major cut to the Economic Development Department budget. And I was just wondering if you could give us some indication as to what the impact is likely to be, and where those cuts are going to be, and how it's going to affect the work of the Economic Development Department. Thanks.
Chairperson, and my apologies for arriving late. Chairperson, I want to make an apology upfront that I will be leaving. I've got a sister who has been at Wachen's Bridge, but I'm still looking for her body. I can't find the body. So I will be going in and out the committee meeting to prepare for going to that place. Chair, I just want to check with the department. They are speaking about a heat map in their presentation, which I think on the findings of the auditor general or auditor general and the priority findings. do you have, as a department, do you have a time frame on responding to what the AG has raised, and also do you have maybe a roadmap that will take you to a clean audit? When will that happen, or are you affected by, because you are a department that is, that may be affected by the other department you're working with, is that going to take you, that is that going to be impossible for you to have a clean audit as a department? Thank you very much.
Before you, Honourable Nzimbe, Honourable Andrew, the committee and the minister is very sad to hear this news from you. We hope that you find your deceased. Honourable Nzimbe.
Thank you very much, Chair. Let me also welcome the presentation by the department and also congratulate for the unqualified audit outcome. Also welcome the approach in responding to the AG's findings. It is very impressive. We hope the department for the that we can have a on KP15 on recycling, as presented, I'm interested in knowing the establishment of the Polish company at what stage is it now. And also on KP16 about the recycling program, I'm interested in knowing where are these cooperatives that are being assisted, situated, the provinces, and are they in any state of survival beyond the EDG and the rural development intervention? And the other one is there any plan in place to address the drought challenge that the country is facing, especially on the co-ops that are dealing with livestock and vegetable growing? Is the department having any plan in addressing it? Also on KPI 16, the township economy. We welcome their training and the certificates, but are they not financially assisted now, so that they, based on the lessons and the education, the support that they've received, that they can start implementing the Smolanyana funds that they will be assisted? I mean, I think it's the first lesson, the implementation part. Are they not financially assisted? Thank you.
Thank
you. Let's really welcome. As what you do with intervention, I think we are being able to be in terms of them to deal with interventions. See, this is about who is, can we really consider find health, water, and sanitation? So make use of stream water. The drought is there. The drought is there. So I'm trying to look at you use stream water. I think there is that kind of a program that's seen in other countries. I think the national you can learn from that quite a lot. Lastly, by donations. I foresee that we are able now to deal with a lot of issues, like for instance, on issues of vacancies. Because there's work done, washing the fewer staff. In that one, the issue of staffing is that you are able to deal with in the few staff that you're having. And so that arrangement of secondment was taken place. Can we get some kind of illustration on that point? Because I see the work is done twice, there's no fewer people.
Dr. Cardo.
Thanks, sir. Thanks, Minister. I just have a few questions relating to the presentation. The first is on slide 14, where you speak about youth employment. I wanted to sound you out about the employment tax incentive. My understanding is that it lapsed in January 2017, and no specific mention was made of it in the budget speech last week. Are you aware of any plans to review the ETI? If so, would EDE support a rollover of the ETI between 2016-17 and 18-19? Secondly, KPI 4 on slide 22, You talk about additional capacity for ITAC to monitor the implementation of the scrap metal policy. I was wondering what the outcomes were of ITAC's MNE of the implementation of that policy. And then I had an allied question to that. In December, proposed amendments were published in the Government Gazette on the prior preferencing system to do with scrap metals, which seem to me anyway to be quite administratively burdensome and costly. And I wanted to know whether any research had been done into the likely consequences of those proposals on employment. I'm particularly interested in why there is a requirement in those proposals that Port Elizabeth must be the sole port in Ethel port, and I wonder whether you could shed any light on that. Thirdly, also on slide 22, KPI 4, mention is made of steel industry interventions. I think at our last engagement in December, or perhaps it was a question I submitted to you, I forget, I asked about the proposed steel mill. I wanted to know now whether there's been any progress on the pre-feasibility studies and has a final investment decision been taken on that steel mill. And then finally, a question on government's infrastructure development program. You mentioned quite a bit, I know, your contribution to the CERN debate the other day about government's achievements on infrastructure development. And I just wanted to know, how sustainable is that infrastructure development program? Looking at the budget, you know, the NDP says that the total of 10% of GDP should go to infrastructure development. My analysis of the budget is that it's actually much less than 10% in the current year, and that's going to decline even further. Thanks.
Thank you very much,
We thank the Honourable Minister for the presentation, also for the good work that continues to be done in the sector. Because sometimes we need to indicate that indeed there is progress. We still need to do more, but there is progress. We are not standing in one place. I have a few questions here, just for clarity, having appreciated the way that is going on. Once on KPI 4, the interventions that have been done there in the source field, there are two companies that were saved there by the IBC, which could have gone under if IBC had not intervened with the EDD. Can we be told, are we in a position to know as to approximately how many jobs were saved through that intervention? Because saving jobs, creating jobs, those are part of the strategic objective of the department. And on KPI 6, the company that is a solution has been brought on board so that it trains members of the co-ops there. That is a very good idea, so that these hops, you know, become productive. The training was to start in November. Are we in a position to know if it indeed starts and that there is progress in that regard? The third one relates to the wonderful campaign of the vaccination of cattle, of the, it's so saying, of the arrangement that the department used with current beef. This is a good idea, but how possible would it be, Honorable Minister, even if it's not current beef per se, but how possible would it be to try and take this initiative into other areas where emerging farmers, you know, are also so that they can save, so that we can save their cattle, especially in this period of drought. And the last one relates to KPI 15. There is an intervention that has been done. There is a company that was just about to go under. It was said the idea is to keep it going so that, you know, an investor can come and buy it. The report says, the presentation says, already there was a potential international investor was interested in the company. Do we know if the investor proceeded to buy the company or whether negotiations are still continuing? Those would be the questions for clarity that we want to ask, but we want to reiterate that we appreciate the good work that the department is doing under very tough conditions, economic conditions. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The presentation was well received. We appreciate it. I've got only one question or two. One is the one that says, what is the department doing to differ from DEE to make sure that the focus on tech industries is broad-based? And the second question would be on the one slide in page 22, where we talk of this deal. When can we expect a briefing on this deal from the department? Because there's a lot of interest from us, particularly the issue of the operation. And then the last one, in one of the meetings, the department was reported that we're going to discuss this of, let me use this question. We're going to respect.
Thanks.
And then for 10 minutes, and then we'll come back at 25 past 11.